The new one-minute manager explains. When he arrived at the manager's office, Courtney said, "He's been wondering when you'd be back to see him." As the young man entered the office, he noticed again how clear and uncluttered it was. The manager greeted him with a warm smile. "What did you find out in your travels?"
"A great deal."
"Tell me what you discovered."
"I found out why you're called the new one-minute manager. It's because you keep adapting your three secrets.
You and your team set one-minute goals together to make sure everyone knows what they're being held accountable for and what good performance looks like. Then you catch people doing something right and give them a one-minute praising. And when you notice people have made a mistake, you provide them with a one-minute redirect."
"What do you think about all that?"
"I'm surprised at how little time it takes, and yet it seems to work." The young man hesitated and then said, "I hope I'm not being rude with this question, but do you really think it takes only a minute to do all the things you need to do as a manager?"
The manager laughed.
"Of course not. But it's a way to make a complicated job more manageable. It often takes only a minute to refocus on goals and give people important feedback on how they're doing. Using the three secrets probably represents only 20% of the activities we engage in. Yet they help us achieve 80% of the outcome we're looking for. It's the old 80-20 law." The manager added, "What else have you noticed?"
"Well, people obviously enjoy working here, and you collaborate with each other to get great results. I'm convinced it works for you."
The manager assured him,
"And if you do it, it will work for you too."
"Perhaps, but I think I would be more likely to do it if I could understand more about why it works."
"Sure, that's true of everyone, young man. The more we understand why something works, the more apt we are to use it. Let me show you one of the reminders I keep on my computer." The young man turned and saw, "The best minute I spend is the one I invest in people." It's ironic that most companies spend so much of their money on people's salaries, and yet they spend only a small fraction of their budget to develop people. In fact, most companies spend more time and money on maintaining their buildings, technology, and equipment than they do on developing people.
"I never thought of that," the young man admitted. "But if it's the people who get the results, then it makes good sense to invest more in people."
"Exactly." The manager then revealed, "I wish I'd had someone invest in me sooner when I first went to work."
"What do you mean?" the young man asked.
"With most of the organizations I worked in, I often didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. No one bothered to tell me. If you asked me whether I was doing a good job, I would say either, 'I don't know,' or 'I think so.' If you asked why I thought so, I would reply, 'I haven't been chewed out by my boss lately,' or 'No news is good news.' It was almost as if my main motivation was to avoid punishment."
The young man said, "I can see why you manage differently, but I still wonder why the three secrets are so effective. For example, why does setting one-minute goals work?"
Why one-minute goals work.
"You want to know why setting one-minute goals works?" the manager echoed.
"Fine."
He got up and began to pace slowly around the room.
"Let me give you an analogy that might help. I've seen a lot of unmotivated people at work in the various organizations I've been employed in over the years, but I haven't seen that many unmotivated people after work. One night, years ago, I was bowling, and I saw some of the problem employees from my previous organization. One of the real problem people, who I remembered all too well, approached the line and rolled the bowling ball. Soon he started to hoot and holler and jump around. Why do you think he was so happy?"
"Because he knocked down all the pins."
"Exactly. Why do you think he and other people don't have that same level of excitement at work?"
The young man gave it some thought.
"Because they don't know where the pins are, what they're aiming at."
"I get it.
How long would they want to bowl if they couldn't see the pins?"
"Right," said the one-minute manager.
I believe many managers assume wrongly that the people on their team know what to aim for. When you assume that people know what's expected of them, you are creating an ineffective form of bowling. You put the pins up, but when the bowler goes to roll the ball, he notices there is a sheet across the pins. So when he rolls the ball and it slips under the sheet, he hears a crack, but doesn't know how many pins he knocked down. When you ask him how he did, he says, "I don't know, but it felt good." It's like playing golf at night. A lot of my friends have given up golf, and when I asked them why, they said, "Because the courses are too crowded." When I suggested they play at night, they laughed, because who would ever play golf without being able to see where to hit the ball? It's the same with watching team sports. How many people would watch two teams compete if there was no way to score? "Yeah, why is that?" asked the young man. "It's all because the number one motivator of people is feedback on results. They want to know how they're doing." In fact, we have another saying here that's worth noting. Feedback is the breakfast of champions. It's feedback that keeps us going. Unfortunately, even when some managers learn that feedback on results is the number one motivator of people, they usually set up a third form of bowling. When the bowler goes to the line to roll the ball, the pins are still up and the sheet is in place. But now there is another ingredient in the game, a supervisor standing behind the sheet. When the bowler rolls the ball, he hears the crash of falling pins, and the supervisor holds up two fingers to signify he knocked down two pins. Actually, do most managers say, "You got two?" "No," the young man said with a smile. "They usually say, you missed eight." "That's right. The question I always used to ask was, why doesn't the manager lift up the sheet so both of you can see the pins?" The answer was that he had the great business tradition of performance review coming up. "Because he had performance review coming up?" wondered the young man aloud. "Why is it," the manager asked, "that most people don't know how they're doing until they go through their performance review and learn all the things they didn't do right? Then, when the person is told they are not up for a bonus or a promotion, how does that person feel? How long will it be before they start wishing they worked somewhere else?" "I know the answer. 1 minute," the young man joked. The manager laughed. "Why do you suppose managers would put someone through that?" asked the young man. "So they can look good," said the manager. "What do you mean?" "How do you think you would be viewed by your boss if you rated everyone that reported to you at the highest level on your performance review scale?" "Probably as a soft touch, someone who can't discriminate between good performance and poor performance." "Precisely," said the manager. "In order to look good as a manager in most organizations, you have to catch some of your people doing things wrong. You have to have a few winners, a few losers, and everyone else somewhere in the middle." I remember one time when visiting my son's school, I observed a fifth-grade teacher giving a geography test to her class. When I asked her why she didn't allow the kids to use maps during the test, she said, "I couldn't do that because all the kids would get 100%. As though it would be bad for everyone to do well and get an A. Everyone might not do a great job of using the resources at hand, so they may not get an A. But why not set it up so that everyone has a chance to be a winner?" The manager continued, "I remember once reading that back when practically everyone knew their own phone number, someone asked the genius Albert Einstein what his number was, and he went to the phone book to look it up. He said he never cluttered his mind with information he could find somewhere else." Now, if you didn't know better, what would you think of someone in those days who had to look up his own number? Would you think he was a winner or a loser? The young man grinned and said, "Probably a loser." "Sure," the manager responded. "I would too. But we'd both be wrong, wouldn't we?" The young man nodded his agreement. "It's easy for any of us to make this mistake," the manager said. Then he showed his visitor something on his computer. "Look at this. Everyone is a potential winner. Some people are disguised as losers. Don't let their appearances fool you." "You see," the manager said, You really have three choices as a manager. First, you can hire winners. They are hard to find and they cost money. Or second, if you can't find a winner, you can hire someone with the potential to be a winner. Then you systematically help that person become a winner. If you are not willing to do either of the first two, and I am continually amazed at the number of managers who won't spend the money to hire a winner or take the time to develop someone to become a winner, then there is only the third choice left: prayer. That stopped the young man cold. Prayer? The manager laughed quietly. That's just my attempt at humor, young man. But when you think about it, there are many managers who are saying this prayer daily. Please let this person work out. The young man laughed and said, "If you hire a winner, it's really easy to be a one-minute manager, isn't it?" "Sure," said the manager with a smile. "All you have to do with people who are winners is set one-minute goals and let them run with the ball." "I understand from John Levy you almost don't even have to do that with him." "You're right," said the manager. "He's forgotten more than most people know around here. But with everyone, winner or potential winner, setting strategic one-minute goals is a basic tool for productive behavior. Is it true that no matter who initiates setting the one-minute goals," the young man asked, "each goal always needs to be described on one page, including due dates?" "Yes, it's true." "Why is that?" "So people can quickly review their goals daily and check their performance against those goals." "I understand you have them write down only their major goals and responsibilities, and not every aspect of their job," the young man said. "Yes. That's because I don't want a lot of goals filed away somewhere and looked at only once a year when it's time for a performance review or setting next year's goals. As you might have seen, people on our team keep this valuable reminder nearby." He handed him a card that read, "Take a minute to look at your goals. Then look at what you're doing and see if it matches your goals." The young man was amazed at the powerful simplicity of those words. "Could I get a copy of that?" he asked. "Sure," the manager said. As he was taking notes on what he was learning, the aspiring young manager said, "You know, it's difficult to grasp everything there is to learn about one-minute management in such a short time. There's certainly more I'd like to learn about one-minute goals, but could we move on to discuss one-minute praisings?" "Sure. You're probably wondering why they work, too." "Well, I think everyone likes to be praised, but after a while, don't people start to feel like the praisings are fake?" The manager responded, "That depends on whether the praising is merited and sincere." Why one-minute praisings work. Let's look at a few examples. Maybe then it will be clear to you why one-minute praisings work so well. "I'd like that," said the young man. One example is when parents first help children learn to walk. Can you imagine standing a child up and saying, "Walk," and when he falls down, you pick him up and spank him and say, "I told you to walk"? Instead, you stand the child up, and the first day he wobbles a little bit, and you get all excited and say, he stood," and you hug and kiss the child. The next day he stands for a moment and maybe wobbles a step, and you are all over him with kisses and hugs. Finally, the child, realizing that this is a pretty good deal, starts to stand on his legs more and more until he eventually walks. The same thing goes for teaching a child to speak. Suppose you want a child to say, "Give me a glass of water, please." If you waited until the child said the whole sentence before you gave her any water, the child would die of thirst. So you start off by saying, "Water, water." All of a sudden, one day the child says, "Waller." You jump all over the place, hug and kiss the child, and get grandmother on the phone so the child can say, "Waller, Waller." That wasn't water, but it was close. Now, you don't want a kid going into a restaurant at the age of 21 asking for a glass of Waller, so after a while, you only accept the word water, and then you begin on please.
These examples illustrate that the most important and natural thing to do to help people become winners is to catch them doing something approximately right in the beginning. Then you move on toward the desired result. So the key in the beginning, the young man said, is to catch somebody doing something approximately right until they can eventually learn to do it right.
You've got it, said the manager. By setting up a series of goals, they are establishing targets that can be more easily achieved.
At work and in life, too, you don't have to catch a winner doing things right very often, because good performers catch themselves doing things right. But people who are learning benefit from praise and encouragement from others. The young man asked, "Is that why you observe new people a lot in the beginning, or when your more experienced people are starting a new project?"
"Yes. Most managers wait until people do something exactly right before they praise them. As a result, many people never get to become high performers because their managers concentrate on catching them doing things wrong. That is, anything that falls short of the final desired performance."
"That doesn't sound like it would be very effective," the young man suggested.
"It isn't," said the manager.
"Sadly, that is what too many organizations do with new, inexperienced people. They welcome them aboard, take them around to meet everybody, and then leave them alone. Not only do they not catch the new people doing anything approximately right, but periodically they zap them just to keep them moving. This has been a popular management style for a long time. I call it the leave-alone zap style. You leave a person alone, expecting good performance from them, and when you don't get it, you zap them."
"What happens to these people?" asked the young man.
"If you've been in any organization, and I understand you've visited many, you know because you've seen them. They do as little as possible." The young man laughed.
"You're right. I've seen it."
Then he added, "Working with that kind of a manager, you can understand why so many people don't enjoy their work."
The manager agreed.
"That's so true. And they're also not engaged in what they're doing or very interested in doing good work."
The young man said, "I'm beginning to see why the one-minute praising seems to work so well. It's certainly better than focusing only on what's wrong."
Then he added, "It's funny, but that reminds me of some friends of mine. They told me they had a new pet and asked what I thought of their great idea for house training the dog."
"I'm almost afraid to ask," said the manager.
"How were they going to do it?"
"They said if the dog had an accident on the rug, they were going to take the dog, shove his nose in it, pound him on the butt with a newspaper, and throw the dog out the open kitchen window into the backyard, where the dog was supposed to do his job."
The manager laughed.
"Then they asked me what I thought would happen with this method. I laughed because I knew what would happen. And it did. After about 3 days, the dog pooped on the floor and jumped out the window. The dog didn't know what to do, but he knew he had better clear the area."
The manager roared his approval.
"That's a great story. Punishment doesn't work when you use it with someone who's learning.
Rather than punish inexperienced people who are still learning, we need to redirect them. That involves resetting clear one-minute goals to make sure they understand what's expected of them and what good performance looks like."
The young man asked, "So, after you have done that, do you try to catch them doing something approximately right again?"
"Precisely. In the beginning, you're always trying to notice situations where you can give a legitimate one-minute praising."
Then, looking the young man straight in the eye, the manager said, "You are a very enthusiastic and receptive learner. That makes me feel good about sharing the secrets of one-minute management with you."
They both smiled. They knew a one-minute praising when they heard one.
"I'd rather have a praising than a redirect," the young man said. "I understand now why one-minute goals and praisings work. They make good sense."
"But why do one-minute redirects work?"
Why one-minute redirects work.
The manager explained, "There are several reasons why one-minute redirects work so well. To begin with, the feedback happens in small doses because you catch the mistake early on. Many managers gunny-sack their feedback, That is, they store up observations of poor behavior until frustration builds. When performance review time comes, these managers are angry in general because their sack is really full, so they charge in and dump it all at one time. They tell people every single thing they have done wrong for the last several weeks or months or more. It's not fair to people to save up negative feelings about their poor performance, and it's not effective. The young man breathed a deep sigh. So true, and that often happens at home, too. Yes, some parents and spouses do that, too, and they get the same poor results. What happens then is people usually end up disagreeing about the facts, or they simply keep quiet and become resentful. Often, the person receiving the feedback becomes defensive. They don't own what they have done wrong. This is another version of the leave-alone zap way of communicating. If managers would address things earlier, they could deal with one behavior at a time, and the person would not be overwhelmed. They'd be more likely to hear the feedback the way it was intended. That's why I think performance review should be an ongoing process, not something you do only once a year. So, is that why the redirect works? Because the manager deals fairly and clearly with one behavior at a time, so the person receiving the feedback can hear it? Yes. You want to get rid of the bad behavior, but keep the good person. So you don't attack the person just because they've made a mistake. Is that why you make it a point to praise people in the second half of the redirect? Yes, the goal is not to tear people down, but to build them up. When our self-concept is under attack, we feel a need to defend ourselves and our actions, even to the extent of distorting the facts. When people become defensive, they don't learn. So you want to separate their behavior from their worth. Reaffirming them after you've addressed the mistake focuses on their behavior without attacking them personally. When you walk away, you want the person aware of and concerned about what they did, instead of turning to a coworker and talking about how they were mistreated or what they think of your leadership style. Otherwise, the person takes no responsibility for the mistake, and the manager becomes the villain. The young man asked, "Why wouldn't you give the praising part of the redirect first, and then the critique?" For some reason, it just doesn't work that way. Some people, now that I think of it, say that I am nice and tough as a manager. But to be more accurate, I'm actually tough and nice. "Tough and nice?" echoed the young man. "Yes, in that order." This is an old philosophy that has worked well for literally thousands of years. There's a story from ancient China that illustrates this. Once upon a time, an emperor appointed a second in command. He called him the prime minister and, in effect, said to him, "Why don't we divide up the tasks? Why don't you do all the punishing and I'll do all the rewarding?" The prime minister said, "Fine, I'll do all the punishing and you do all the rewarding." "I think I'm going to like this story," the young man said. "You will," the one-minute manager said with a knowing smile. Now, this emperor soon noticed that whenever he asked someone to do something, they might do it or they might not do it. However, when the prime minister spoke, people moved. So the emperor called the prime minister back in and said, "Why don't we divide the tasks again? You have been doing all the punishing here for quite a while. Now let me do the punishing and you do the rewarding." So the prime minister and the emperor switched roles. Within a month, there was a revolt. The emperor had been a nice person, rewarding and being kind to everyone. Then he started to punish people. People said, "What's wrong with that old codger?" And they threw him out on his ear. When they came to look for a replacement, they said, "You know who's really starting to come around now? The prime minister." So they made him emperor. "Is that a true story?" the young man asked. "Who knows?" the manager said with a laugh. "Seriously," he added, "I do know this. If you are first tough on the behavior and then supportive of the person, it works better." Do you have any modern-day examples of where a one-minute redirect has worked, maybe outside the business world? Sure. Athletic coaches all over the country use the equivalent of a redirect to improve their athletes' performances. For example, a well-known college basketball coach told me he uses it to create championship teams. How so? He told me about a time when his best player was playing so poorly in an important game that unless he quickly improved his game, the team would probably lose. So he took this player out of the game and had him sit on the bench. His best player? Asked the young man. How could he afford to take him out of an important game? He couldn't afford not to. Unless the player played his A game, the team wasn't going to win and would miss competing in the championship. So, as the player sat on the bench, this coach told him exactly what he was doing wrong. You're missing easy shots, you're not grabbing any rebounds, and you're loafing on defense. I'm angry with you because you don't look like you're even trying. He waited a moment, then added, You're better than that. You need to sit on the bench until you're ready to play the way you're capable of. After what seemed like forever, the player stood up, went over to the coach and said, I'm ready to go in, coach. The coach responded, Then get back in there and show me what you can do. When the player got back in, he was all over the court, diving for loose balls, grabbing rebounds, and making his usual shots. Thanks to his effort, the rest of the team also improved their play, and they won the game. So, basically, the young man said, the coach did the three things that John Levy told me about earlier. Tell people what they did wrong, tell them how you feel about it, and remind them they are better than that. In other words, their performance is bad, but they are good. Precisely. You see, it is very important when you are leading people to remember that behavior and worth are not the same things. What is really worthwhile is the person who's managing their own behavior. It applies equally to us when we're managing our own behavior. In fact, if you realize this, the manager said, as he brought up another screen on his computer, you will know the key to providing a really successful redirect. We are not just our behavior. We are the person managing our behavior. The young man said, It sounds like there's respect and caring behind a redirect. I'm glad you noticed that, young man. You'll be more successful when you respect the individual you're redirecting. The young man was hesitant to ask the next question. While one-minute praisings and one-minute redirects are effective, could they be seen as ways to manipulate people and get them to do what you want? That's a great question. Manipulation involves deceptively controlling people for your own advantage. If you're trying to manipulate people, you're doing a poor job, and it will come back to bite you. Your job is to show people how to manage themselves and enjoy it. You want them to succeed when you're not around. That is why it is so important to let people know up front what you are doing and why. It's like anything else in life. There are things that work and things that don't work. Being honest with people works better. As you may have noticed, being dishonest eventually leads to failing with people. I can see now, the young man said, where the power of your management style comes from. You care about people. Yes, I do. And I also care about results. The young man was beginning to see more clearly how closely related people and results were. He remembered how gruff he thought this special manager was when he first met him. It was as though the manager could read his mind. Sometimes, he said, you have to care enough to be tough. That is, tough on the poor performance, but not on the person. As you undoubtedly know, making mistakes is not the problem. It's not learning from them that causes real problems. The young man asked, What happens when a person keeps making similar mistakes? After you've already provided them with a redirect. Well, let me ask you, how do you think a manager feels when that happens? Probably unhappy, annoyed, or even angry? Yes, that's when you need to take a break and calmly look at the situation, so your emotions don't cause you to make a mistake. A one-minute redirect is intended to help people learn. However, when a person has learned something and has shown they can do it, but they have a won't-do attitude, you need to look at the cost to the organization and whether you can afford to keep such a person on the team. That made sense to the young man.
By now, he had grown to like the new one-minute manager and knew why people enjoyed working there.
They worked with him, not for him. The young man said, "Maybe you would find this interesting. I wrote this to remind me of how goals and consequences are related, and how one-minute goals, praisings, and redirects work together." He showed him a page from his notes. Goals begin behaviors. Consequences influence future behaviors.
"That's good," the manager said.
"Do you think so?" the young man asked, wanting to hear the compliment again.
"Young man," the manager said lightheartedly, "it is not my role in life to be a human tape recorder. I do not have time to repeat myself."
Just when the young man thought he might be praised again, he felt he was in for another one-minute redirect. But the bright young man kept a straight face and said simply, "What?" They looked at each other for a moment, and then both broke into laughter.
"I like you, young man," the manager said. "How would you like to work here?"
The young man stared in amazement. "You mean work for you?" he asked enthusiastically.
"No, I mean work for yourself, like the other people on our team. I don't believe anybody ever really works for anybody else. Deep down, people like to work for themselves. The people on our team work as partners, and together we look for ways to improve. I do my best to help them work better, and in the process, we all enjoy our work and lives more. And we're a great benefit to our organization." This was, of course, what the young man had been looking for all along.
"I'd love to work here," he said. And so he did. Over time, he benefited greatly from working with such an innovative manager. And eventually, the inevitable happened.
Another new one-minute manager. He, too, became a new one-minute manager. He became one not because he thought like one or talked like one, but because he led and managed like one. He kept things simple. He set one-minute goals. He gave one-minute praisings. He provided one-minute redirects. He asked brief, important questions, spoke the simple truth, laughed, worked, and enjoyed. And perhaps most important of all, he not only managed, he also led people to be creative and do new things. He encouraged those around him to do the same for the people they worked with. He even created a pocket-sized game plan to make it easier for people to become a new one-minute manager. He gave it as a useful gift to those who could benefit from it. It read, "The New One-Minute Manager's Game Plan. Start. Let people know up front what you are going to do to help them win. One-minute goals. Make it clear what the goals are. Show what good behavior looks like. Put each goal on one page. Quickly review goals frequently. Encourage people to notice what they're doing and see if it matches their goals. If not, urge them to change what they're doing and win. If the goals or any part of the goals are achieved, you win. Give one-minute praisings. Praise the behavior. Do it soon. Be specific. Say how good you feel about it. Pause to let people feel good too. Encourage them to keep up the good work. Next, proceed with more success. However, if goals are not achieved, you lose. To help you win, give one-minute redirects. Re-clarify and agree on goals. Confirm what happened. Describe the mistake soon. Say how concerned you feel. Pause to let people feel their own concern. Tell them they're better than the mistake and you value them. When it's over, it's over. Then proceed to a better performance. A gift to yourself. Many years later, he looked back on the time when he first heard about one-minute management. It seemed like long ago.
The need for his organization to be more agile and responsive had become even greater since he'd first met the new one-minute manager. So he was very grateful that the special manager had been so generous with his time and knowledge. It had proved to be very valuable. Remembering his promise to share what he'd learned with others, he had expanded the notes he'd taken long ago and had given a copy to each person on his team. They'd read it and said that using the three secrets had made a real difference. They found that praisings, especially when they were balanced with effective redirects, were a powerful way to accomplish goals sooner. Several people also revealed they were using the principles at home and were enjoying catching each other doing something right. Liz Aquino had come by to say, "Thank you for letting me know about the three secrets. I have much more time now." He'd responded, "We have the new one-minute manager to thank for that." Sitting at his desk, he realized how fortunate he was. He now had time to think and plan, and to give his organization the kind of help it really needed. He had more time to spend with his family and pursue other interests. He even had time to relax. He felt lucky to have less stress than other managers might experience. Because the people on his team were doing so well, his division had fewer costly personnel problems, less illness, and less absenteeism. As he looked back, he was glad he hadn't waited to start using one-minute management until he thought he could do it just right. He'd admitted to his team, "I'm not used to telling people how good they are or how I feel, and I'm not sure I can always remember to tell you that I value and think well of you when I give a redirect." So he had to smile when someone said, "Well, you could at least give it a try." By simply asking people if they wanted to be managed by such a manager, and admitting that he might not always be able to do it right, he'd accomplished something important. People knew up front that he was honestly on their side from the start, and that made all the difference. A gift to others. He was lost in thought, so when the phone rang, it startled him. He heard his assistant say, "Good morning. There is a young woman on the phone who would like to know if she could come and talk with you about the way we manage here." He smiled, remembering his own early experiences. "I'd be happy to talk with her," he replied. Later, when he met with the bright young woman, he said, "I'm honored to share what I've learned about leading and managing." As he offered her a seat, he added, "I will only make one request of you." "What is that?" the visitor asked. "Simply," he began, "that if you find it useful, you will share it with others." This is Dan Warren. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The New One-Minute Manager by Ken Blanchard, Ph.D., and Spencer Johnson, M.D. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services, directed by Anya Maradian, executive producer Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2015 by Blanchard Family Partnership and Candle Communications, Inc. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.